like walking on a tightrope with no net.
Oh, you want to talk about walking on a tightrope with no net? How about deciding of who your vice president candidate is, your running mate, is going to be in a very truncated period of time, and then having the world watch, and then within the last, I would say, 20, 25 minutes, things have started to come together. And while there is still no official announcement from the campaign, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, the CNN, and the Associated Press are all reporting that Kamala Harris has chosen Tim Walz to be her running mate. The Minnesota governor, a military veteran, has a record of wins on conservative terrain and has been chosen. We will talk about this for probably a really long time this morning, and we welcome your input. We'd love to hear from you. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. And it's a big day. It's something that we knew was coming as early as, I believe, Saturday. They said the announcement would probably come Tuesday morning. And with a huge event planned in Philadelphia tonight. And that is going to set off 5 days of campaigning between the vice president and her new running mate. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org, and let us get to right away to our panel to talk about this and see what we all make of it. Semi-retired editor-at-large, columnist, editorial writer for the Times Union, Jay Jochnowitz is here. Good morning, Jay. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. My biggest worry 10 minutes ago was the fact that you guys were out of cappuccino.
Yeah, well, you know, my biggest worry. So the I was listening to CNN on the way in, and they were saying, "Oh, you know, there's this many cars are pulling up to the Walz house. This many cars are pulling up. This many cars are pulling up." And I was like, "Man, this would be great if we could just hold till 9:05."
Yeah, right.
Dreams do come
yeah,
true.
Yeah, so it was pretty close. Pretty close. We also welcome Anna Markowitz, an advanced lead for the White House and former chief of staff for State Senator Michelle Hinchey and former assistant county executive for Pat Ryan. Anna, good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks. This is certainly an exciting day to be on the radio, so I'm happy to be here.
It's a historic day. It's a fun day and certainly a lot to talk about. We also welcome Mark Whitman back to the program. Mark is we had a panelist that took ill, and Mark was nice enough to fill in today. So he's joining us by phone, investment banker on Wall Street, Mark Whitman. Always nice to have you, especially on these days of extreme news.
Thanks, Joe. I hope my phone's coming through okay.
Yeah, you're booming. You're good. All is
good.
All is good. Good morning and welcome to you.
Thank you. And if I may, I'll take a little pride. I was born and raised in Minnesota. And if I think you look over the history of time, you can argue that the state's politicians on the national stage have had a disproportionate influence. And I'm proud to see it looks like Governor Walz will be the pick today.
Well, he is, according to most major news organizations, the pick. And so what my understanding is just the rollout of this was that the campaign is there was a call to be made by the vice president to the running mate, in this case we believe Tim Walz, and that would then be videoed, recorded, and then obviously produced for an announcement that would be the official announcement. So that's all still underway. What I guess is was the tipping point was that as the 50 cars started to pull up to the Walz house to get him ready for the phone call, is when the announcement started to break. And all of this in anticipation of this major event tonight, I believe at 5 p.m. in Philadelphia. Anna.
Oh, well, it's hard to keep secrets in Washington, I guess. It's unfortunate that they didn't get to do the announcement the way they had planned. But here we are. And I'm excited about it. It took me a second to process. I had been leaning more towards Shapiro. I kind of thought that he, as kind of a better known, good orator, would be a good match for her. But I do see the appeal of Governor Walz as well. He brings out kind of more that folksy, rural, funny, down to earth. So, you know, perhaps she doesn't need to double down on people that I, as a New York progressive, would like. Perhaps she needs to diversify her ticket more and try to appeal to more of the Michigan and Pennsylvania and Arizona, and that this is a pick that would kind of widen her net to get more voters. So I think it's going to be really interesting. I think that he's so far pretty unknown with most people, and so it's going to be interesting to see how people react to him as they get to know him better.
So far, he is being referred to as happy-go-lucky. He is 60 years old. He's 1 year older than Kamala Harris. He is a second-term governor and chair of the Democratic Governors Association. He does not hail from a traditional battleground state. Minnesota has supported a Republican presidential candidate only once since 1960, but Walz's credentials as a military veteran and a gun owner who previously represented a Republican-leaning rural part of Minnesota in Congress could help Harris appeal to working-class white voters who have turned away from Democrats and helped fuel Donald Trump's political rise. Jay.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm looking at a picture of him right now, and he's just, he's sort of a Midwestern Biden, you know, just happy-go-lucky really does. Symbolize what he looks like in this photo. Just a big, happy smile. He's got happy cheeks and all that. And he's got white hair and white skin. And he balances a ticket.
I hope that's a button. Happy cheeks.
Happy cheeks. And, the timing is really interesting to me because being an unknown, he's in a race, and Trump will be in a race. Trump's people will be in a race to define him as quickly as possible, or for him to define himself. So today is a really good day for him to do it. This was a well-structured idea that have a rally, introduce him. He'll be able to hit the ground running in a speech, show people that he's capable of putting some sentences together, and maybe not offending too many people. And Trump's campaign will be scrambling, I think, to figure out how to dismantle all the positives on him. They'll take apart his military service as they did with John Kerry. They'll probably say it was a fake pig that he was holding in every photo, that he doesn't own real guns. They're just like BB guns or something, or they're not high powered enough for America. It'll be that kind of nonsense for a few days, and then we'll settle into a race, and the vice presidents will become less important.
I mean, it's always going to be about the overall campaign, the views, the ticket. That's to be expected, but they're also, at some point, and that will probably come today, but in certainly the days to come, of a direct comparison between Tim Walz and J.D. Vance.
Yes. Yep. And they're two very different people.
Yes. Both military backgrounds. Otherwise, a lot different.
Yeah. And I think that the other thing I forgot to mention is that I am sure this will be the prize, just the priceless thing for Trump to come out with. It'll either be Trump or Vance who will say that this idea of calling people weird, it's mean.
Yeah.
It's mean. It's nasty.
It's a mean, nasty thing. And there was a lot going on about the weirdness, and it was Walz who sort of originated it, it surprised me that it went around, and I can sort of understand people's, like, you know, do we really want to use that term? But by the same token, I'm not wrong.
No, it's not. You know, I just please, no, nothing awkward like basket of deplorables, and we'll be okay. Weird is,
you know, I would argue that the weirdest thing I've heard in the past 10 days is a bear cub being left, a dead bear cub being left in Central Park. That is weird. I don't care how you look at it, but whatever. Mark Whitman.
Well, Joe, first of all, I just wanted to mention that actually, I think Tim Walz is going to win the National Publishers Clearinghouse. That's why all the cars are outside.
Yeah, yeah. The balloons, the...
Right. Wouldn't that be ironic?
The corpse of Ed McMahon.
But look, I think before we talk about Walz specifically, and I mentioned this yesterday, we just do need to step back and at least be happy that we've got diversity on this ticket in whole. And this whole selection process has underscored for me the hubris in our history, wherein two white men for almost the entirety of our history said to the rest of the country, don't worry, we can represent you all. We've got this. I'm glad that things are changing. I wish they would have changed to a point where the political identity of the ticket didn't matter, but clearly it did, which is why Harris chose amongst those she did. With Walz, actually, I think if you look at his background, you may be sort of happier than you thought you would be. He's governed in Minnesota very much as a progressive. He's overseen gun restrictions. They legalized marijuana there, and he introduced paid family leave. The other thing you all didn't mention in his background was that he actually was a teacher and a coach, which I think is a great background in contrast to both Trump, frankly, and to J.D. Vance, which is literally having put, you know, his time, effort and tears into helping society in other ways than being a politician, which I think is important. And as I mentioned yesterday, I do think some of the first ads they'll try probably online will be a sort of where was Tim question. He was admittedly slow to respond, or at least many allege he was slow to respond with the National Guard in Minneapolis when there were protests in the wake of the George Floyd murder. So I think we already know the shape of the attack that they'll face. The good news for the Democrats is that there's no – all of the statistics and sort of crime in this country show that it has – been reduced under this administration. So I think that's an easy counter for them. I also just want to – I put a note to myself in my calendar 10 years out. I'd love to read – when I read Vice President Harris's biography as to why she selected this, you wonder what it was, because Josh Shapiro seemed such a compelling choice. The two foibles there were his Jewish heritage, which – might have been an identity issue for him. So, or if there was something else, but that I don't know that is relevant in the near future. As I said, as a Minnesotan, I take some pride in seeing Tim Walz selected here.
I was actually less surprised in the, and it's all shades of gray at this point, but as looking at, I was less surprised in maybe Shapiro being the second or even third choice. Mark Kelly being taken out of the final two surprised me. They were the top three were Shapiro, Walz, and Mark Kelly. And then the point where Kelly was removed from that list I found to be really interesting and not really – I'm not exactly sure – what the rationale was behind that, because he had a lot of support going in.
Yeah, I mean, he was an astronaut. Come on.
Right.
I'm not sure exactly what made, Walz and Shapiro get to the last round and not Mark Kelly. I was also kind of disappointed about Pete Buttigieg not getting support. I think he's such a great messenger. I know he's gay. I wish that wasn't a problem in 2024, but he just, hopefully he still, is out there and on interviews and doing his part. It just he
I
was
agree
so
with
good.
You, but I think he has an extremely bright political future ahead of him. I don't think we can feel too sorry for him.
Okay. I'll try to wipe my tears away and wait for, you know, 2028, et cetera.
Yeah, I liked Pete too. Every time I hear that guy, it's just wow, how did somebody so coherent and so witty and so intelligent get into national politics? It's just delightful. Kelly, I really liked Kelly as a potential candidate, except for one thing. Every time I have seen him, he seems like he's in a bad mood.
He looks frumpy.
He does. He looks angry.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, it's I just don't know what to make of that.
No, he looks like the Uber is about 20 minutes late.
Yeah. You know,
they wanted happy cheeks, not sad cheeks.
I know. Or angry cheeks. Angry cheeks. Scowling cheeks. The other issue with him as opposed to Waltz is that, you know, while he punches all the right buttons, there's one big one that probably would worry people is he's married to a woman. He's married to Gabby Gifford, and she is a leading advocate for gun control, a very vocal advocate for much tighter gun control than maybe America's ready for.
If not her, who, though, right?
Right.
I mean.
Oh, no, I think she's absolutely on the right side of
yes.
the issue. But but the Republicans could have a field day with that. That is a they're coming to take away your guns kind of candidacy.
He said, well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back.
I want to rock and roll.
Once again, welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Breaking news is that Vice President Kamala Harris, the Democratic nominee for president, has chosen Governor Tim Walz of Minnesota as her running mate, elevating a former football coach whose rural roots, liberal policies, and buzzy takedowns of former President Donald Trump have recently put him on the map. He is 60 years old, as I mentioned. He emerged from a field of candidates who had better name recognition and more politically advantageous states. But he jumped to the top of Harris's list, boosted by cable news appearances in which he declared that Republicans were weird. The new clear articulation of why voters should reject Mr. Trump caught on fast and turn the spotlight on the plain-spoken Midwesterner behind it. I did read two reports. I read one over the weekend, and I read or heard one this morning of an anecdote, a story, that after Biden announced that he was stepping down, that one of those over 100 phone calls, I believe, that were made by Kamala Harris in the hours after the announcement from Biden, that one of the first phone calls did go to Tim Walz. And she was asking, she was telling him, obviously, but also letting him know, asking for advice. And the two of them had long conversations and several long conversations throughout the day and over the last several weeks. This is before he was either even being vetted, or at least officially being vetted, as a vice presidential choice. The fact is that she was listening to him and liked what she was hearing and was going to him for advice and vice versa. So apparently that cemented a relationship, which I think would partially explain how he came out of, you know, and it's so hard to say he came out of nowhere. It's only been, what, 2 weeks? So, like,
everything has come out of nowhere.
Like, from Tuesday to Thursday, it just, like, exploded. I think that is, that's one thing to keep in mind. But on that original list that people had, Jake Tapper on CNN referred to it as the buffet of white guys, that that he was not initially on that list, but then slowly was added to it because of, the vetting process had started, and it was somebody that the vice president was very interested in speaking to.
And it'll, you know, I think today will tell us why she chose him. When he comes out and talks, you know, we'll get a chance to see if he can be, you know, the weird comment aside, there's two tasks here. One is to take Donald Trump apart. And remind voters of why they didn't want him in 2020, why they probably didn't want him in 2019 or 18 either, but they definitely didn't want him in 2020. And then to, you know, make the case, this can't be all about Trump, or it's, you know, it's just, you know, going to be a cliffhanger right to the end. If they can start painting a real good vision, especially in the middle of, you know, right now, an economic crisis, or at least, you know, an economic what's smaller than a crisis? you know, it's already starting. The markets are already starting to rebound.
Yes, we're up 111 points. Go ahead, Mark.
Oh, I was going to say, let's take a big deep breath on the middle of a crisis. The markets are not the economy. I don't think things are nearly as dim as you would assume they are if you looked at the market open or close yesterday. I think we're okay. I mean, we may be heading towards a recession in this country. You know, basically people have predicted it for so long, eventually you're going to get it right. I don't think we're in one. There's no sign that we're in one now. And Joe Biden's administration, the Biden-Harris administration, will still have a great record on employment closing out this year or up until the election. Whether or not they should get all the credit for that is a whole different discussion, but the way it works in national politics is the simple argument prevails. And inflation is moderating quite a bit, and it's very likely the Fed will reduce rates quite significantly in September. So I think the economy as a whole will still present a tailwind to this administration. And of course, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, with that said, to Jay's point, though, it took a nanosecond before Donald Trump was talking about, because the market opened the way it did yesterday, that this was all Vice President Harris's fault.
Yeah, and all my good friends on right-wing radio were right there with him on that. Mark Levin started it 2 days ago. You know, predicting, and as you said, you know, you keep predicting it, and eventually you're right, you know, for a moment at least. And then last night I was picking my wife up at the airport, and I had never listened to really late night talk radio before.
Oh, that's great.
Not in a long time anyway. and it was like the Eric Cartman. It was like a guy who had taken his radio cues from Eric Cartman. He gets on and he talks about the Middle East first, and he said, is it the beginning of World War III? I don't know. I'm just asking. And then he gets to the economy. He said, is it the collapse of the whole economy, the global economy? I don't know. I'm just asking. And it was... you know, they're going to do whatever they can to roil the waters. And it'll be interesting if the market does as quickly rebound as it, you know, kind of, you know, mini imploded yesterday. You know, it's just going to be another flash in the pan. And this is the kind of thing that'll, you know, maybe desensitize voters a bit to the rhetoric and have them listen to the actual candidates. We'll see.
But the market was down 3%, led by tech stocks. The market came off an all-time high. Yeah. The market did not implode yesterday. It took risk out. It basically took risk off, or investors took a step back and said, my gosh, we're taking on a lot of risk, so we're not getting paid for it at these levels. This may well be the harbinger of a period of slower economic growth in the country. But I don't think there'll be anything over the next few months that the Republicans will rationally be able to point to. I still think they'll have, obviously, the argument is that most people don't feel great about this economy over the term of this administration. And that will be their argument. It is interesting to note that Walz is very popular amongst white working class generally. In Minnesota, and I'm sure that was not lost on Harris or her advisors.
Yeah, I need a better word to describe what happened yesterday and the the market blip in general.
A belch.
A hiccup.
A belch. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's probably a good word
for it.
It's
hard to know if it will stick and will continue to go down. I really hope not, because that would just be the worst possible timing for the Democrats politically. I mean, at least Harris isn't the incumbent president, so she does have some ability to distance herself, and maybe she won't get quite as much blame. But it certainly is better to be taking partial credit for a booming economy than trying to distance yourself from a faltering one.
So, Mark, at the risk of getting off of the I want to stay on, obviously, Tim Walz and discuss this. But I do want to take the opportunity right now just to ask you a question about what we've seen over the last two or three days in the economy. I mean, we saw this on Friday that the jobs report came out, and there was a loss in the market, and then yesterday there was the dive that the market took upon opening. But so we're saying, oh, that's because of the jobs report. But then in the same token, we're talking over the weekend about how this is international, how this is global. This is a global economy correction. So could you sort of put the two of those together and help explain to me of how a jobs report fits into the larger narrative of a global economic correction?
Yeah, Joe, generally it looks like growth is becoming harder to come by globally. Japan has been hit by some very acute headwinds, and we could spend a whole, you don't want to, but we spent a whole hour on the situation in Japan. That
you're right, we don't.
Yeah, that actually, Japan itself, actually, there were people who had a trade on that once Japan's markets fell as much as they did, actually there were repercussions, adverse repercussions to the United States markets. And so within that background, you also had firms that are very dependent upon consumers, particularly McDonald's and Starbucks last week, saying, gee, we don't think the consumer is feeling as healthy as they have been. They may not provide an easy source of growth in the future. And then on Friday, Warren Buffett halved his stake in Apple. I don't think he gave an explicit reason, but it's clear he also believes the consumer, and he took and he kept the cash on his balance sheet. So he basically told the markets, I think consumer stocks may not do quite as well as they've been doing in the United States, and I'm happy to have cash, which means he's happy to sit while the market corrects and look for buying opportunities if what we saw yesterday is the harbinger of a true correction, which would be down, you know, 20-30%. Which is not out of the question given the run-up we've had. So when you combine all those factors and some others, including the fact that people have been complaining that the Fed is late in lowering interest rates and that that's sort of choked the economy a little bit, the markets got spooked yesterday. They're particularly volatile during the summer when lots of people who watch big positions are away, and we saw the result of that. Again, you know, you sort of have two possible scenarios here, which will things will continue as they have been and the United States will continue to grow, or we will head into a temporary recession. Neither of those would be the fault of this administration, but certainly there'll be a lot of discussion and finger pointing. I'd point out with respect to Trump that up until Friday, he and his acolytes had said the reason the stock market was doing so well was that it was in anticipation of him winning the presidential election. And he took a different tact on Friday. So I guess, you know, as we've seen with Trump, you know, it's heads I win and tails you lose or I coup. And that's what happened. That's the position the Republicans took.
With all the talk of the Fed and its role in where we are now, I was thinking a lot about Trump. I still remember exactly where I was when I was listening to Trump berating the Fed to keep interest rates low, if not lower them more. And this is when they were, you know, all but zero, I think. And, you know, and there was a story today on this, and they were comparing Trump's approach to this of needling the Fed to do what he wanted, as opposed to Biden, who's been very hands-off about that, apparently.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue. Tim Walz is Kamala Harris's choice for vice president. That is the breaking news at this hour, and he will be the running mate for the vice president on the Democratic ticket. We will have much more about this. What do you make of it? Well, we'd love to hear from you. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll get to some of those letters and continue our conversation after this short break.
We'd hear our song on the radio, and the DJ talking about our last show.
Playing Marty Wendell this morning, the Marty Wendell 60th Anniversary Tour, playing the Linda on Saturday. And you can find out more information by going to thelinda.org, thelinda.org, playlist posted online, wamc.org/roundtable. Big story this morning is that Tim Walz is Kamala Harris's choice for vice president. The Minnesota governor was chosen. Last night we had reports that the vice president still had not made a decision and she was going to, quote, sleep on it. And then very early this morning, there seemed to be indications that a decision had been made, and that led to this shortly before 9 o'clock this morning. As we discussed, I want to get to the letters, but as we discussed, the reactions from Republicans have been quick and centered on pretty much exactly what we thought they would. They have centered on him being too progressive and on attacking him for the unrest in Minneapolis following the killing of George Floyd in 2020. Harris, Walz, most left-wing ticket in American history. Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida said on X this morning, Walz sat by and let Minneapolis burn. So those are the early tweets, the early X social media posts that are coming out as of right now. Let's go to some letters from our audience and find out what is on your mind. Cheryl says, enjoying your perspectives. Two ads. The ADDS. The unselected candidates are doing important work for the nation in their positions, and we can be grateful they will continue. Regarding Governor Happy Cheeks, a recent meme suggests Kamala might mean make America laugh again. We have a positive ticket. Regarding the stock market, how about calling this a speed bump?
Was everyone That's good. Right? Everyone good with that. I like belch.
Yeah.
But I'm still 13 years old in a lot of ways. So,
Frederica writes to us and says, I admire Mark Kelly, but am glad we will not be losing another Democratic senator in such a tight margin in the Senate. I also realize moderation is important to attract middle-of-the-road independents. Unfortunately, my main goal in the election is to save the U.S. and the world from Trump and to prevent us from becoming a laughingstock for electing a convicted felon. Mm-hmm. Then we go to Nicole, who said, I heard yesterday that if Trump loses Pennsylvania, he has no path to win. If that is true, it's very hard to understand why she didn't pick Shapiro. This feels like Clinton Kane 2.0, generic, unknown, not particularly interesting. A more exciting pick like Kelly or Shapiro could have kept her momentum rolling. He also appears much older, more Biden-like than the other options, and I'm not sure that's a good idea either. Well, on the age, he's a year older, and I don't even know, maybe just a couple of months older. And so that's one thing. As far as the path to victory, I mean, over the last 24, 48 hours, there were a lot of Democratic groups that were voicing real concern for Josh Shapiro being on the ticket. And so even if you were lucky enough to win Pennsylvania, are you losing other states in the process, which I'm sure went into, or other voters in the process, which I'm sure went into the calculation as well?
Yeah, I think it's always the balancing act of what are the negatives that are going to come with any pick. You know, with Josh Shapiro, it is, you know, perhaps his Jewish heritage that the progressives aren't very excited about him. With Walls, it's his response to George Floyd and the burning of Minneapolis. In the end, it's hard to know where the public is going to land. Are they going to be more invigorated and excited by Walls's messaging? He has had some really good messaging. I loved his video with his daughter in their car driving. Like, he's very folksy and cute, and hopefully can kind of hit the ground running, similar to how Kamala's been hitting the ground running. I think that she's really nailed every single step since Biden stepped out of the race. And so hopefully, you know, you mentioned that they had many conversations over the past couple of weeks. Hopefully that has built her confidence that he can really hit the ground running too. So I hope that is the case and not the opposite, which is what we're kind of seeing with J.D. Vance right now, where I think Trump thought that his folksy, you know, hillbilly elegy, you know, story of overcoming poverty would be a great selling point for him. But I think that it's been a double-edged sword. And so hopefully we don't see the second edge of a sword with Walls.
Yeah, I think that's really the vice president's first and foremost job is the vice presidential nominee's first and foremost job is not to screw up. Don't bring down the ticket. Don't be Dan Quayle. Don't be Sarah Palin. You know, it's
know what papers you read.
Yeah.
Yes.
Don't see
yes.
Russia from your house. Just don't do it. You can't see it from anywhere in the United States.
Well, we're a border state, you know, so
yeah.
God, please don't even go there, you know.
Mike says the choice of Walls means that Minnesota's Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan will be the first Native American woman governor in the United States. That's cool.
That is cool.
Also, a neat factoid as of this decision this morning. Dick writes, I think the media needs to clarify that when Walls said they're weird, he was referring specifically to Trump and Vance, not their followers. Oh, yes. I think that's what makes it so great.
Walt has gone out of his way over the weekend to clarify that there was the criticism in the New York Times and elsewhere that comment was perhaps heading towards the basket of deplorables territory, and Walt wanted to make it clear that I'm talking about the politicians on the ticket. He said it's for Republicans broadly. You know, they're my neighbors. You know, they helped me govern in Minnesota. You know, it's he's trying to draw that distinction. And I actually think that's a fair and intelligent way to talk about it. I mean, those two guys, I mean, on the top of the Republican ticket, they are unique individuals, to put it politely. And I think it's okay to draw that contrast. I think it's important to draw that contrast.
John is still holding a grudge, still mad at us. I'm disappointed that WAMC continues 8 years later to misreport, shouty caps, the basket of deplorables comment. You media keep reporting that Hillary Clinton was talking about all Trump supporters. She was not. She was referring to the Proud Boys, the militias, the neo-Nazis, the white supremacists that Trump had clearly climbed in bed with, the horrible, horrible people who all Republicans prior had disavowed. It's the media's risk reporting that this makes the media complicit in the Republican Party's embrace of fascism.
Hillary should have chosen her words better if she didn't want it to stick. You have to be aware of this stuff as a candidate, that when you open your mouth, every word is going to be picked apart, every sentence is going to be picked apart, and everything is going to stick with you forever. We could correct it a million times, or we could clarify it a million times, but it's not going to change the perception of the public.
And also...
And that's the way people took it.
No, go ahead, Mark.
I understand the letter. It's always important to sort of get these things right. But I think the letter misses two things. Number one, she at one point said that it was half of Trump's supporters who belonged in this basket of deplorables. And I know we're on WAMC, and you can start writing the letters to me now. But that comment came out of within a disposition that Hillary Clinton held towards the electorate that I think many people saw as very dismissive of sort of everyday folk in this country, which made it particularly important for her to clarify who she was talking about. So I understand that the quote's been sort of misused, but I will defend it as a summation of how people thought Clinton referred to much of this country.
September 9th, 2016, at a campaign fundraising event, the Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton used the phrase basket of deplorables, saying it was half of the supporters of her opponent, Donald Trump. They're racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, and Islamophobic. The next day, she expressed regret for saying half, while insisting that Trump had deplorably amplified hateful views and voices.
Yeah,
there was a walking back.
It was. And you know, it what delights me is that we're in an era where all Democrats are radical liberals, communists who are out to destroy the country, and you call someone weird and they cry foul. It's just, this is politics. This is, they call it the silly season for a reason. Everything gets magnified as much as, one politician or another can magnify it.
You never know what quip is going to get you in trouble, right? Yeah. With Mitt Romney, it was binders full of women.
Right.
Yeah. So, you never know. Just be careful with the words you're saying.
Howard Dean could just be screaming states.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, J.D. Vance is getting in trouble right now with the cat ladies running this country. So people will find what you said and they will amplify it.
Mm-hmm. We will continue our discussion about Tim Walz and your letters and move on to other topics as well. I'm going to go retype my tongue. In the meantime, we'll turn over to Ray Graff and news.
But given a thin to just drive that old Chevy again. A 57 Chevy.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. This morning we are talking about the choice of Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota, as Kamala Harris's VP selection. And the way this is supposed to roll out is there will be a video that will be released soon that will be the official announcement. And then from there at 5 o'clock tonight, or, in political time, somewhere within 3 hours of that, there will be an event that will take place in the city of Philadelphia. And that will start off 5 days of going from pillar to post, sea to shining sea of this country in a search of votes prior to the convention, which is around the corner as well. You're going to be going to the convention, Anna?
Yeah, I'm going to be on the team for Kamala, helping with some press. So I'm going to be there to see it in action, which I'm very excited about.
That should be very cool. One of the things I wanted to bring up, it was a story that I had chosen even yesterday before we knew this announcement was coming, although I think we knew this announcement was coming, but we'll never know the answer to this, of course, but the speculation that because this, you think of even this vice presidential choice, if you secured the nomination in June and you knew you had a convention in August or late July, you have quite a bit of time to figure out who your nominee is going to be. This was done in less than 2 weeks. And the question being, does that help or does that hinder? Most political pundits and experts seem to think that for the Harris campaign, this is actually a strength, that this is a process that usually takes a really long time. And I'm not talking just about the selection of a vice president. a nominee, but also just getting ready for the convention and to take that whole 2-3-4 year process and truncate it into 2 years to 2 weeks is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I think it's been really amazing for her. I was worried that, you know, we had been pretty despondent about the chances of Biden. And so I think people were really at a low. And then when he made the amazing decision to step aside, people coalesced so quickly. And I was really worried. You know, Democrats aren't known for coalescing quickly around things often. So I was worried that we'd be like, but what about this unknown person over here? Maybe we need to give them a chance. They could be great. Like, now is not the time, people. Now is the time to be excited and pump up the most likely person to beat Donald Trump, which I think people realized very quickly is Kamala. So I think that's wonderful. And I think that this convention is going to be very unique because this really is like their great coming out to America that people don't really know either of them that well. I feel like what I hear as someone who's on the road for Kamala, my friends and family are like, well, I haven't heard from her in 4 years. Like, where has she been? And she has been out. I can vouch for her. She's been out doing roundtables and tours and getting messages about abortion rights and the economy out there. But for some reason, press hasn't really covered her. But I think now, obviously, that's changing very fast. I think that people are going to get to know her very quickly, and they're going to really be watching this convention, I think, more than they would have if it was Biden, who we already knew a lot of stuff about.
I understand the comment about the press, but is the President Biden at all responsible for that somewhat of a backseat approach?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I mean, I think that he, at least with the abortion rights stuff, I feel like she did start to get out there a little bit. Yeah, perhaps he could have included her a bit more in topics that kind of carried more gravitas or that were more winnable than, say, the border. But I guess, you know, here we are.
I don't know that I can remember a vice president in my lifetime other than the ones who were not good, who really drew attention, you know, from the media or from the public or anything. You're kind of watching the president for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of the vice president's job to just kind of be there, I think. And, you know, and I think the press, yeah, you kind of see that as the second string. I mean, if we got a call that, you know, that Biden wanted to come in for an editorial board meeting, that was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And if Harris was coming in for a board meeting, well, let's check the schedule. We've got to make sure we can fit her in. You know, it's just the nature of things that they are the second string until now. I do think that just the momentum of this, the time compression, is really fascinating. I was watching Jon Stewart a week or two ago, and he said, you know, this idea that we can't, and this is, I think, before Biden dropped out, this idea that, you know, you can't have a campaign in 100 days or so is ridiculous. He said, Britain just did it. France just did it. And as Stewart put it, it was one of the best lines ever, and still had time to have an affair with Belgium. You know, it's interesting because it doesn't allow things to drag on and drag on and drag on, and every little it must be driving the Trump people crazy, because yesterday they thought they had a winning issue in a stock market belch, that this was the end of civilization as we knew it, and today, you know, the headlines are markets rebounding. So, you know, they're going to have a hard time getting traction on any one thing in 100 days. I mean, Trump is notorious or expert in being able to, you know, come up with some sort of zinger that holds. But, you know, we'll see. I think he's struggling now to find one. The DEI thing, I think, is backfiring.
Mark.
Joe, I think there are certain advantages to this shorter campaign. Frankly, I personally wish we did it in about 6 weeks, which is what it took the UK. I think for Kamala Harris, it obviously this dovetails more with the attention span of younger voters. She didn't have to play to the more liberal or progressive base of the party, as one of my favorite commentators remarked a couple weeks ago. And certainly, if you look last time round, that caused her a lot of trouble. And I think that's the big risk for her in this contracted time frame, which is the following. When she was a presidential candidate, she did tack to the progressive side. She took some very non-mainstream policy positions, including she was against fracking. She wanted to eliminate private insurance. Her language around defund the police was sort of less than clear. She now will have to do an interview at some point and clear that all up. And she is notoriously a bad interviewee. Now, that may well have changed, and I'm sure she is being coached. In American politics, Americans like it if you change your position and if at least you have a core set of values and you can explain that change within that set of values. If you think about Ronald Reagan or Clinton or Obama specifically, we all knew what they stood for. And so if one of the ancillary policy positions changed, so long as it dovetailed with their outlook on the world, America sort of gave them a pass. So within this compressed time frame, there are two issues for Vice President Harris. She has to define that overarching outlook on the world that will allow her to explain her changes in policy. And she's going to have to explain those changes in an interview setting where she hasn't been particularly effective historically. And there won't be a lot of time for cleanup if they have trouble. So that's the risk that this entails for her.
I think that's a great point, because we are, you know, we talk about it's been a whirlwind, and it certainly has been a whirlwind. But in 2 weeks, there has not been a sit-down interview. And that does seem surprising. I assume it's intentional. I can't imagine that none of the networks have approached and said, would you like to talk to us? But you wonder, this campaign so far seems to be very coordinated and very organized. So we'll hope, I guess, that the best case scenario here is that it is part of the plan. But I think Mark brings up a really good point of what exactly is, you know, what, how will that be rolled out?
And who she sits down with, who she picks to do that with. Yeah. Is it going to be the New York Times? Is it going to be the Post, CNN? I don't think it's going to be Fox. I don't think they're going to get the first interview with her. But that, too, will be interesting. Whether it's a more of a news personality or more of a an opinion personality,
right?
That she sits down with.
I think they're just trying to ride this wave of excitement for as long as possible, and kind of the less you know, the more excited people are. I think we saw it at the state level with Kathy Hochul when she first took office. People were just like so excited that she wasn't Cuomo, that, you know, nobody was saying anything negative about her at all. And then, you know, a few years later, after a few Senate sessions, people haven't gotten exactly what they want. Housing didn't go through as smoothly as people hoped. And all of a sudden, you know, the narrative changes. You have more data points to associate with negatively. So I think that maybe they're trying to kind of ride that wave of like hope and dreams and not bring in the details until they have to.
She turned out to be a pretty good. We had her in for an editorial board meeting the last time she ran. I think it was the last time she ran, and she was excellent. She you know, had obviously anticipated a lot of the questions, a lot of the harder questions she was going to get, and I thought she handled herself very well through the whole thing. And not, we had Clinton in when she was a senator. She was very well rehearsed. You could see it. You didn't feel that with Hochul, not the same way. You really felt like she was talking almost off the top of her head, and you knew she wasn't. So,
All right. Anybody else want to jump in? Okay. We have a few minutes. I want to get to a lot of the letters that we have. 220-somethings. Simone Biles and Jordan Chiles set a beautiful example for the 70-somethings and other somethings in U.S. politics today by bowing down to Rebecca Andrade, I believe that is how that's pronounced, on the podium competition with affection and respect. No disdain and acrimony. What a concept. That from Mary this morning. Carrie said, yesterday I listened with an interview with Mr. Walz on the Pod Save America podcast. I had never heard him before, but absolutely loved his sense of humor and his clear-spoken, crisp way of describing centrist and progressive politics. Plus, he talked about everything you can eat at the Minnesota State Fair. Did you go to the Minnesota State Fair a lot, Mark?
Joe, I actually used to participate in the Minnesota State Fair and stay there over a number of days. It was a joyous experience, and the culinary options are particularly unique.
Anyone who can describe a pronto pup and has expressed his love for corn dogs is someone that America will fall in love with, says Carrie. Then we go to Larry, who says, what I'm seeing on social media is early reaction to the Walz selection is this has a Tim Kaine vibe going for it. Young people are not going to be enthusiastic and motivated. They feel the Democrats are ossified. Getting the youth vote over 30% is fundamental for the Harris campaign. I don't see how this pick helps. Anyone on that?
Hopefully Harris can be motivating the younger voters. I think that she called for a ceasefire very early on, or not very early, but earlier on than Biden. And so people are the youth vote, I think, so far has been showing in polls that they're going to turn out more for Harris than they would have for Biden. And so hopefully, you know, the videos of her dancing and laughing and cooking kind of energizes the youth vote. And Walz is more of a, I'm going to motivate the middle of America to vote.
And also, please excuse this heresy, but if you were to choose a very young candidate, a candidate who was specifically chosen to connect with the youth of America, you still have no guarantee that the youth of America is going to come out and support that candidate. Right? I mean, that's just that. Go ahead, Mark.
I think the issue of age is relevant in politics, but I think the initial reaction to Walz is dumb. I think it's overreacting. I think more important for young voters and youthful voters would be the fact that Walz has a very progressive record. And I actually think if you consider why Shapiro wasn't selected, it probably was in deference to the younger, more progressive side of the Democratic Party. So I see this selection on Harris's part in large measure trying to shore up and satisfy the progressive, youthful part of the party. I also, by the way, we hadn't mentioned it, but I think he'll take apart J.D. Vance as well. I think that'll be an enjoyable thing to watch.
Yeah, and I also think that age doesn't necessarily mean that the youth votes aren't going to turn out. Like, everybody's favorite Jewish grandpa is Bernie Sanders, and the youth love him. So you never know.
You never know. Roz says, I think one reason Harris didn't pick Kelly is she didn't want to be overshadowed by him. Thank you for a good discussion, she writes. Anna says, go ahead.
Joe, I'm sorry. I've heard a number of people politely say it. When you all in studio were talking about, gee, it's too bad Buttigieg couldn't get it because he's still verbally adroit. I actually think if I were drafting a debate team, I would have drafted J.D. Vance ahead of Mark Kelly, and I think that had something to do with how this selection played out.
All right. That's interesting. Abby writes, Walz was my first choice out of a wonderful pool of candidates, and I'm so pleased. I love his positive energy that matches hers, a great duo. Maybe Pete can be Secretary of State or Press Secretary. I love Pete. Oh, don't make him Press Secretary.
No.
Secretary, I'm all with the Secretary of State. I've been on that bandwagon for a while, but not the press secretary. Let's see. Let's go to Mark. I was disturbed by your panelist saying that the problem with Shapiro was his Jewish heritage. It is not. It is his support for Israel and Netanyahu. That is from Mark. Let's see. Then Anna says that Josh Shapiro supports school vouchers, sending our tax dollars to subsidize private schools. This only serves to divide our nation even more. I'm happy to support the Harris Walls ticket. And that is one message we got. We got another into another note. I'm waiting for it to pop up on my screen. I have it's taking its time, and I apologize for that.
While you wait for that, Joe, I will mention to the listeners, if they have not seen that photo of the podium of the women's gymnastics for the floor event, you ought to take a look. And if that doesn't warm your heart, you should check your pulse.
Yes, much agreed. It's a very, it's a beautiful moment and something that's really quite beautiful to see. Mike writes, Mr. Whitman's commentary just now embodies one of the primary functions of the pundit class, attempting to share public opinion and convince people that far-left policies like single-payer health care and tracking bans are deeply unpopular and must be abandoned. These are not factual statements. In fact, they are ideological. This should be expected coming from a Wall Street investment banker. They always turn to that. Turned pundit who doesn't mind a system with for-profit health care, quote unquote. Well, a lot of us out there do mind, sir, says Mike.
Well, she's abandoned those policies, and I stated no view of my own. So I'd ask the letter writer to consider that. And I'll leave it at that.
All right. Sounds good. Let's see if we go to Ray. I'm very happy that Kamala Harris chose a Midwesterner for a running mate. In my experience, most Midwesterners, thank you, have a wonderful manner about them. Friendly, polite, witty, perfect combination to go up against Trump and Vance. The contrast will be apparent. That from Ray. Then we think we have a letter or two left. And that was the one I was having trouble getting up on the screen. Leonard says, I had dread that Kamala would choose Shapiro. Harris already brings a slick style to the race. Shapiro would double that. Waltz brings frump. I can relate to that, says Leonard.
I have to agree with that. You know, and I think to your point, too, that I think Harris brings enough of the energy to the ticket to attract younger voters. I think if you're going for the swing states, a little seriousness, a little frumpiness, for lack of a better word, is not necessarily a bad thing. And I think, you know, it'll be, I still say, today will be, it'll be really interesting to hear how he introduces himself, what he says, how he presents himself, whether it's as a progressive, whether it's as a moderate, whether it's as a sober voice of statesmanship, or, you know, or whether he comes out, you know, kind of a little pugilistic, you know, regarding Trump and Vance. But still, I have a feeling he's part of the reason he's chosen is because he is, for lack of a better word, stable.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have more to discuss, and we'll do just that on the other side of a news break right after this.
To all of them old songs we used to know.
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. The big news, of course, has to do with Kamala Harris choosing Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as her running mate, and the announcement, the news was broken this morning. There will be an official announcement made online, and then that followed by an event at 5 o'clock from the city of Philadelphia later on today. We're going to take a break from that for just a moment and talk about some other items in the news. And I would like to begin with Mark wasn't scheduled to be on the show today, but I'm very glad that he is, because we get to talk about Google as a monopoly. I want to hear everyone's opinion on this, of course. But the ruling on Google's search dominance was the first antitrust decision of the modern internet era. This from the New York Times, and this news breaking yesterday afternoon. It's the first decision of the modern internet era and a case against a technology giant. Google acted illegally to maintain a monopoly in online search, a federal judge ruled on Monday, a landmark decision that strikes at the power of tech giants in the modern internet era, and that may fundamentally alter the way they do business. The Justice Ahmed Mehta of U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia said in a 277-page ruling that Google had abused a monopoly over the search business. The Justice Department and states had sued Google, accusing it of illegally cementing its dominance in part by paying other companies like Apple and Samsung billions of dollars a year to have Google automatically handle search queries on their smartphones and web browsers. Mark.
Phil, if you listen to the European press talk about technology or other fast-moving industries in the United States, they often express a little bit of jealousy and explain our tremendous success, attributing some of that success to the fact that in the United States, we tend to initially, with respect to new industries, take a very light regulatory touch. And I do think if you look at our success as a nation and our history, there's some argument for that. I also think this decision and others highlight the fact that technology is an interesting industry. It moves so quickly in today's modern age that there is an argument for keeping that light touch for a shorter period than we have historically. This, by the way, is the second notable decision against Google in terms of anti-competitiveness. There was another one in terms of their payment platform that where they ran up against the maker of Fortnite. And there's another one outstanding regarding their policy with respect to advertisement. And if what the judge alleges is true here, I think it's clear the United States needs to take measures to try and make the marketplace more competitive. And I think the fact that we're waiting a little bit too long with some of these nascent industries is also underscored if you look around the landscape to social media and the fact that we have let it become now a diagnosed health problem for our children. And we need to get on regulating it. But then you get back to the system of influence peddling that the Supreme Court, at least for the meantime, has allowed in the United States. And you see where the tension is and why all of this stuff ends up in courts, because the politicians, it's very hard for politicians to get their hands on these industries. So I think I would hate to see the United States change its light touch, but I think we need to take a firmer touch much more quickly in the technology sector than we have. And I think this decision underscores that.
Anna.
I am definitely not an expert in this topic, but I think it is interesting the pay-to-play aspect of this, that they're able to kind of purchase the ability to be the default. I think that is something that is worth more investigating. Is that something that we want to see happen in other arenas as well. I think another pause for concern is the fact that, you know, people can buy ads to be the top search results for Google, and most people click the first or second link, and often those are sponsored ad purchased links. And so kind of looking into what is the effect of that on the information that we are getting as consumers. So I'm glad that we're looking into this. I would like to understand better kind of what the ripple effect is to other companies, other markets. You know, how would this really impact the tech field at large?
Sure. I have to cue my old timer voice for this, but I remember back when you used things like, there was a search engine called Excite and Alta Vista and all that. and then I remember this new kid on the block called Google. I mean, it was like, you know, us nerds in the newsroom were constantly turning up our noses at other people when they mentioned they used this search engine or that search engine if they didn't use the one we used. And, you know, it was always some leading, you know, some person who was ahead of the curve. And the person who was ahead of the curve happened to probably be the person who said, what about this Google thing? And very quickly, you know, what was so good about Google, ironically, was that it wasn't packing the top of its results with paid advertising. You know, people could pay to get at the top of other search engines, and Google was not doing that. They came in it was exactly what, as a consumer, I wanted. Was I want the relevant results? I want the most relevant results, and the things that are gonna get me to where I need to be. And you know, I was trying to understand this. What is wrong with what Google does? If it's that good and everybody likes it, why shouldn't it be packaged in your browser? Because that's the one you're going to choose anyway. Although I don't use Google anymore. I use DuckDuckGo for the privacy aspects of it. So, and it's just as good, and they're not trying to push ads on me. They do put at least one paid ad at the top of it, and it's clearly marked. And it also happens to be often the right one, but I'll usually scroll down to find the non-ad version of that, just to let them know I'm not falling for this. You know, Mark said that the European press, when you read it, you can get a trace of envy in the way that the United States has kind of a light touch on these regulatory things. For me, it's just the opposite as a consumer, that I look at what Europe does in terms of privacy, as a journalist, sometimes I'm at odds with these things, that, you know, the right to be forgotten is not something journalists really like. But as a consumer, I see a lot of things being done in Europe that feel like they're ahead of the curve, and certainly ahead of where the United States is, and usually on the right track as far as I can tell, whether it's privacy, whether it's consumer rights to not be tracked, and to have tracking cookies, that you can turn this kind of stuff off. I think we have been slow to this game, and I'm glad to see that this decision will probably help accelerate it.
May I clarify my comment? I think the European envy is with respect to our initial regulation of nascent industries. I agree with your conclusion, and I think most Europeans would, that the Europeans have set about regulating tech sooner and more aggressively. And I think the general consensus is we're now at a phase where we're long overdue in this country to at least catch up to where Europe is in many of the subsectors in these industries. So it's not the European envy is with respect to sort of how easily we incubate initial ideas. And part of that is because the government tends to stand back. But in technology, things move so quickly. We've stood back for too long. Mm-hmm. And I think it's pretty simple. I mean, when you read about a vendor who claims they have a better product, spending billions of dollars to be the default that's there when you open the package, you have to ask yourself the question, are they ubiquitous because they're better, or why is it they're spending, you know, $20 billion? Does that help their ubiquity? And this court clearly, with respect to that, and I'm sure other practices, answered yes, that that's part of their success, and that's not legal. We need to, the competitive environment that we foster in this country is based on rules and regulations. We are an incredible nation in terms of our economic power, and part of that is because, by and large, through history, we've gotten it right in terms of fostering competition.
We have 5 minutes and a lot of letters from listeners, mostly on the VP choice of Tim Walz by Vice President Harris, and a lot of them have to do with the word frumpy. So let's go. I love Kamala's choice of Tim Walz. It reminds me of Warren Buffett, and there's nothing frumpy about him. They both have that down-to-earth, sincere vibe, the total opposite of Trump and Vance. Then, in a note with the simple subject line, not frumpy, Walz is not frumpy. Have you heard him speak? He is very well-spoken, energetic, and makes no bones about calling out Trump. He'll make a fantastic campaigner. Frumpy? I love the videos with the governor and his daughter. Watch. He is not frumpy. He is a hoot in a half. Shapiro, no, this is on Shapiro, I'm sorry. Scott writes, you need to correct the letter writer who said Shapiro's problem was support of Netanyahu. He has spoken out harshly about Netanyahu, whereas the other VB hopefuls have not been scrutinized for their positions on Israel. Then,
Joe, as a Minnesotan, can I just talk about the frumpy topic real quickly?
Yeah, of course.
I do think there's a through line, and maybe we should challenge our listeners to come up with the right adjective. But if you look at Minnesotans on the national stage, whether it be Humphrey, Mondale, Wellstone, or even Klobuchar, there is an earnestness and a sort of down-to-earth nature about them that is particularly appealing. And there is a through line, and I think Walz belongs in that through line. I'm not sure what you call it, but there is something there.
Yeah, don't you know?
Yes, that's right. Well, and I also like the idea. I think, it was a listener first. I mentioned a couple times, but it was a listener first who used the term frumpy. But I do think, in comparison, and it won't stick. Don't worry.
Yeah, I would agree. There is a term. I'll ponder it, and in 2 or 3 weeks when I'm back, I will have that term if nobody else has come up.
There you go.
Folksy.
Yeah. I'm good with qualified.
That's a great adjective.
That's good for me. John says a few large corporations control the food industry and the oil business. They keep the food and gas prices abnormally high. This is on inflation. These corporations are making Biden-Harris look bad and hoping that Trump will be reelected and give them another huge tax break. Then James says, I believe Walz's articulate and comforting style will seal the deal with many, many ex-Republicans like my mom that have been in party limbo and traumatized by Trump for so long. He's a ray of light next to Kamala. This joyous ticket gives us something to believe in. And a last letter that I think we will have time for this morning is from Kara. You sound a little demeaning calling Walz happy-go-lucky. He is extremely intelligent and articulate. He champions liberal issues. Wait until you hear him.
And that's exactly what I've been saying.
Yes,
over and over.
Yes.
I really want to hear this guy tonight because, honest to God, I've never heard him before. So I really want to see how he comes out of the gate.
Yeah, I feel like I've heard him in like viral videos of him and his daughter or holding a pig. But I'm really looking forward to learning more substance.
We'll eclipse the pig moment. My thanks to Mark Whitman, especially for filling in at the last moment. Mark, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Also, thanks to Anna Markowitz and Jay Jochnowitz for being here on a very busy and exciting news day. Thank you very much. We'll be back right after this.